Welcome back to The Daily Poem, a podcast from Goldberry Studios. I'm Sean Johnson, and today is Thursday, March 28th, 2024. Today's poem is by George Gordon, Lord Byron, and it's called The Destruction of Sennacherib. This is a poem that many listeners are probably already familiar with, and I would wager that if you are among them, it's probably because you encountered this poem in school. That tends to do one of two things for a poem. Either creates a lifelong affection and loyalty for the poem, sometimes even for poems that otherwise wouldn't deserve it, or it can do the inverse and create a kind of lasting antipathy for a poem that doesn't deserve it. And I think, and I've encountered a number of people who indicate this poem tends to fall into that latter category, that because we remember it from school, we tend to think of it in a category of juvenile poetry. It also, because of its rhyming couplets and its pretty consistent meter, tends to have that poemy sound that strikes especially the reader or listener of contemporary poetry, modernized poetry, strikes our ear very particularly. I want to stick up for this poem, especially because it's so frequently taught because it is a model of a number of poetic virtues, as I hope to point out here in a minute. So if you aren't familiar with this poem, welcome aboard, come along for the ride. If you are and you love it, glad to have you. And if you don't remember loving it, try and hear it again with some fresh ears and eyes, and we'll see what we can do about that. I'll read the poem, say a few particular things about it, and then read it one more time. Here is The Destruction of Sennacherib. The Assyrian came down like the wolf on the fold, and his cohorts were gleaming in purple and gold. And the sheen of their spears was like stars on the sea when the blue wave rolls nightly on deep Galilee. Like the leaves of the forest when summer is green, that host with their banners at sunset were seen. Like the leaves of the forest when autumn hath blown, that host on the morrow lay withered and strown. For the angel of death spread his wings on the blast, breathed in the face of the foe as he passed, and the eyes of the sleepers waxed deadly and chill, and their hearts but once heaved and forever grew still. And there lay the steed with his nostril all wide, and through it there rolled not the breath of his pride, and the foam of his gasping lay white on the turf and cold as the spray of the rock-beating surf. And there lay the rider, distorted and pale, with the dew on his brow and the rust on his mail, and the tents were all silent, the banners alone, the lances unlifted, the trumpet unblown. And the widows of Asher are loud in their wail, and the idols are broke in the temple of Baal, and the might of the Gentile, unsmote by the sword, hath melted like snow in the glance of the Lord. This poem comes from a collection of poems that Byron completed in 1815 called Hebrew Melodies, and they're all devoted to aspects of Jewish history and culture, many of which are narrating biblical events, like this one, narrating the siege of Jerusalem, recorded in the Book of Kings. When Assyria, under Sennacherib, the great imperial power of the world at this time had surrounded the much smaller Jerusalem and already sent a saucy ultimatum to the city. The king, however, refused to give in, instead impeaching pleading with the Lord, rather, to deliver them. And he heard, and he came. So we have in the opening stanza this predatory image. The Assyrian is like a wolf coming down upon a flock of sheep, the Lord's pasture that's undefended, apparently, seemingly. But the second stanza is one of my favorites because we have this powerful, violent image of the wolf. Sennacherib is never mentioned in the poem, incidentally. It sort of dehumanizes the Assyrian force from the beginning. Then in the second stanza, Byron does this really clever thing where there's really very little difference between the first two lines of the stanza and the last two. Like the leaves of the forest when summer is green, that hosts with their banners at sunset were seen. Like the leaves of the forest when autumn hath blown, that host on the morrow lay withered and strown. And the just so subtle and slight variation in those two couplets or pairs of lines, and yet the very dramatic variation in the reality that's being narrated there, goes a long way to demonstrating just how little effort on the part of God and the angel of death is required to change the fortunes of Jerusalem and of the powerful Assyrians. Right? With the alteration of just a few words, summer turns to autumn, green turns to withered browns, and a lively and violent and ill-intended Assyrian host turns into, as the scriptures put it, all dead corpses. And I love the way that the simplicity of that alteration in the text mirrors the simplicity with which God alters that circumstance through the work of the angel of death. You get a similar demonstration of the shift in plot in the color language. In the opening stanzas, we get purple and gold, and then a few lines down, we get green. And as the aftermath of the event is narrated, we get fewer colors. And when color is referred to, it's in words like pale. In fact, the dead horsemen are described as distorted and pale, along with their dead horses that have also not been spared. And then, though the first few stanzas have plenty of verbiage and a language of action, the fifth stanza in particular is completely devoid of action. So that just as the narration kind of grinds to a halt, so the image in your imagination becomes immediately still. The rider lay, is not moving. The tents are silent. The banners are alone, right there, uncarried, unattended. And the lances, likewise, there's a silence. The trumpets are not blown. There's no living thing making noise. And it's really artfully and deftly done, that a kind of meta onomatopoeia isn't quite the right word, but almost, that there are things happening on the linguistic level that are intentionally mirroring what's happening in the plot of the poem itself. And then we have the declaration of victory, not only over the force, but over what the force represents in the final stanza, that this is not just a victory of one army over another, but this is a victory on the part of God and over gods. And though Byron was not a particularly religious person himself, it has been speculated that his interest in this supernatural element, especially divine assistance for the underdog Hebrews, is partly because he saw a direct parallel between the plight of the Hebrews throughout much of
history. And the situation the Greeks were in during his own lifetime, he said at one point, "The Greeks have as small a chance of redemption from the Turks as the Jews have from mankind in general." And his sympathetic view for the Greeks was borne out in his own life. He spent much of his own personal fortune helping Greece fight for their independence from the Turks. In fact, he even went there himself and took charge of a Greek militia, finally contracting a fever and dying in Greece before the end of the conflict. There's definitely a personal interest there in the underdog story, and this is a pretty good one. Here's the destruction of Sennacherib one more time. Note to this time the anapestic meter that carries you along to the end of the rhyme, or the end of the line where that rhyme is hammered. This is one of the things that emphasizes the end rhyme to your ear, and one of the things that causes people to complain that this poem is too poemy, as I mentioned earlier. But it's also what gives the poem its driving force, which is really important in the opening stanzas to convey the sense of threat, as the Assyrian hordes ride down upon the people of Jerusalem. And then sets us up for that striking contrast when the fortunes of the two parties are reversed. Here's the destruction of Sennacherib one more time. The Assyrian came down like the wolf on the fold, and his cohorts were gleaming in purple and gold, and the sheen of their spears was like stars on the sea when the blue wave rolls nightly on deep Galilee. Like the leaves of the forest when summer is green, that host with their banners at sunset were seen. Like the leaves of the forest when autumn hath blown, that host on the morrow lay withered and strown. For the angel of death spread his wings on the blast, and breathed in the face of the foe as he passed, and the eyes of the sleepers waxed deadly and chill, and their hearts but once heaved and forever grew still. And there lay the steed with his nostril all wide, but through it there rolled not the breath of his pride. And the foam of his gasping lay white on the turf, and cold as the spray of the rock-beating surf. And there lay the rider, distorted and pale, with the dew on his brow and the rust on his mail. And the tents were all silent, the banners alone, the lances unlifted, the trumpet unblown. And the widows of Asher are loud in their wail, and the idols are broke in the temple of Baal, and the might of the Gentile, unsmote by the sword, hath melted like snow in the glance of the Lord. This has been the Daily Poem. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another poem for you. To listen to our catalog of past episodes or to show your support for the show, please visit dailypoempod.substack.com. On behalf of everyone here at Goldberry Studios, I'm Sean Johnson. Until next time, happy reading.